Okay, good morning, everybody. I hope everybody is well. I will put the source sheets on the chat because people want to download them. Don't forget you can always sign up to the distribution sheet beforehand and get the source sheets in advance if that's what you would prefer. Just let David Hochhauser have your name. Just make sure I'm giving you the right thing. Yeah, here are the sheets coming up again. Just let David have your name, just pop it onto the chat on his on OU Israel, and he will be able to get you all of the sheets in advance. And you can always get them afterwards as well, with the recordings too. So either way, you should be able to catch up with the sources. So good morning, everybody. Nice to see everybody. David just put his email there, so that's there for everybody to see. Nice to see my mum and dad. Hi, mum and dad. And I hope we're going to have a fun time today, dealing with a very important topic. It's part two of a two-part series on the issues of Emunah. Let me give you a little bit of advanced warning. Next week, Be'ezrat Hashem, we're going to look into the issues of Purim Meshulash. Purim Meshulash is the three-day Purim in Yerushalayim, which only comes around every few years. We haven't had one for well over a decade, and there's going to be one in a few years, and then after that it's 2045. So if you want to wait till 2045, then be my guest. But if I were you, I wouldn't delay while you could do a mitzvah right now. And we'll talk about Purim Meshulash next week. And the week after, I want to talk about another Purim issue, which we've never discussed, which is women's Megillah readings, which throws all sorts of exciting, interesting, contemporary issues that we, again, haven't talked about for some time, if at all. So that's coming up soon, and then we'll be more into kind of pre-Pesach mode. More about that later. For now, we're dealing with Emunah. I'd just like to announce the sponsorship this year. And all the shirim for 2021 have been sponsored very kindly and anonymously in the merit of an aliyah for the neshamas of Matasyahu ben Yisrael, Aaron ben Menachem Lev, and Eliana Bas Yaakov. We're very grateful for the sponsorship, and it should be an aliyah be'ezrat Hashem for those neshamas. Okay, so where are we up to? Last week we've tackled a bit of a heavier topic than sometimes we normally do, and there's a part two to that as well, which is coming now, which is the question of Emunah. How do we fulfill the mitzvah to believe in God? If you believe in God, you believe in God. You don't need to be told to believe in God. And if you don't believe in God, then no one's going to convince you just because someone says there's a mitzvah to believe in God. We looked at that last week, and we saw that actually the mitzvah of Anochi Hashem Elokecha, the beginning of the Ten Commandments, which we read last week on Shabbos, that the mitzvah of Anochi was actually a mitzvah to think, to work things out, to do your best, to try and understand. It's not easy, and we'll see today it's actually, on a certain level, impossible to fully understand, but that's okay. And therefore we saw that the Rambam, certainly in the Chinuch and Rabbeinu Bachya and many others, really focus on the need to try and work things through, whether it's rationally, whether it's philosophically, to look at the proofs of God, to think about that, and I gave you some reading material on that too. And then we looked at the Kuzari, which was a different perspective. The Kuzari's perspective was that actually philosophy takes you so far, but it doesn't really take you far enough. Because at the end of the day, philosophy always leaves you with questions. And even if you have answers to those questions, there are questions on those answers, then there are answers to those questions, and it goes on ad infinitum. And as I said last week, either you just run out of steam, you run out of time or energy or intelligence, and you never know, had you just been that little bit more intelligent or focused or worked harder, than you would have worked out an answer to your question, or would you have thought of another question. And so the Kuzari says there's nothing wrong with thinking of things philosophically, but at the end of the day, he thinks Emunah should be much more connected through Jewish history, being part of Klal Yisrael, being part of the Jewish people, being part of the Masorah, the tradition that the Jewish people stood at Sinai and spoke to God, which is very much central to our understanding that that really happened and that there is a direct line of communication from there. So that's a much stronger Emunah, practically speaking. And I think, by the way, that's true, especially for young people. Most young people that I meet don't find that the philosophical issues really ignite them. Whereas being part of the Jewish people, being connected to Israel, etc., youth groups and Jewish groups, that is a very strong element of Emunah. And we saw at the end of last week's shir, Rabbi Lam, and someone even emailed me, said that they plowed through all of Rabbi Lam's, the full essay, I'm sure a few more of you did as well, on faith and doubt, where he sets out all the different kinds of faith and doubt, etc., and I hope that was helpful and useful. Today, I want to take things to the next level. Now, we could talk about this for like a whole year, but if we did, I suspect that there would be only three people left on the Zoom by the end of the year. So we're not going to do that. We're going to move on to other things next week. But I do need to do part two. Part two moves on to the next logical step, which is the second mitzvah, which is another verse which is much more famous than Anochi Hashem Elokecha, which is the verse, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. The first verse that we teach to a kid, the verse that is on the front of our lips in the beginning of the day, at the end of the day, the verse that people say if they die, Lo Yaleinu Akidosh Hashem, the verse that was said all through the Holocaust millions of times by people as they died, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, that is a critical verse, and we need to give it a little bit of treatment today, because we say it so often, it's very important that we understand it better. So let's look at that today, and we'll see, actually, that goes hand in hand with last week's mitzvah. Remember, the Rambam said that the mitzvah is to think and to understand. Shema Yisrael is going to tell us that, actually, we'll never understand. And we'll see where we go with that. It lets us down a little bit, after having got us all excited that we want to learn about God. Shema Yisrael is going to tell us, forget about it. You'll never actually get there. So we'll see how we pick ourselves up again after having been let down. So let's start with the sheet. Let's just look at the pasuk to start with. Number one, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Everybody on this Zoom knows it. The most interesting word in many ways, two interesting words in this, are Shema and Yisrael. Shema here meaning not just to hear, but to understand. Na'aseh v'nishma, we will do it, we will understand it, we will think about it, we will look into it. And Yisrael, who are you talking to? Shema Yisrael. So the two most obvious pshatim that are being given is you're talking to yourself. Listen, Jew. Listen, Yisrael. This is what you have to understand. Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. So in a sense, it's not a prayer. You're not turning to God. It's a pledge of allegiance. You're saying every morning, every evening, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Or the Gemara brings that you're addressing Yaakov Avinu, Yisrael, the original Yisrael, and you're saying, listen, we're still here. We're faithful to your message. And there's the whole, you know, famous Midrash, which we're not going to get into today, about Yaakov Avinu wanting to address his children, and then the Nevuah, the Ruach HaKodesh, the spirit that he had left him, and he said, maybe there's somebody here who is not on message, who is not with the program, and the children answered him, Shema Yisrael, listen, our father Israel, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, we're all with the program. So that's all connected to that verse. If you look in the Rambam looks at this as the second mitzvah. So Anochi, that we looked at last week, is the first mitzvah. Shema is the second mitzvah. Look what he says here. A few interesting, important things to start with. HaMitzvah HaShnia, the second mitzvah, what is that? He had Sivoy Shetzivanu Be'emunat HaYichud. God has commanded us to understand, to believe in Yichud. Oneness, that God is one. What does that mean? This first cause that we talked about last week, that is God, the underpinning of all reality. Echad, he's one. V'hu amru yitaleh Shema Yisrael, and that's what it means when it says Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Rotim b'zeh, we'll analyze what one means in a little bit. Rotim b'zeh amar, what does this mean? Shehu amnam hotzianu, he took us indeed out of Egypt, min ha'avdut, from being slaves to Pharaoh, Va'asa imanu masha asa min ha'chesed v'hatov, and did all those things, focused on our people, took us out of Egypt, gave us what the man, etc., al-manat, so that what? And later on we'll talk about freedom from and freedom to, very important, al-manat, so that, sheneman ha'yichud, that we will appreciate this idea of yichud, that there's one God, one focus, one set of fundamental values, ki anachnu chayavim b'zeh, that's what we have to do. The Haradash Yomra Mitzvah Yichud, they talk all the time about the Mitzvah of Yichud. The Yikru Gamkein, and he says, I'll tell you something, says the Rambam, this is also called HaMitzvah's Malchus. The idea that God is a Melech. What does it mean that God is a king? Well, he's very big, he's very important. No, God is a king means the king is the one, is the fulcrum. The king is the center of all things. He is the point around which all other things flow out in concentric circles. There is one focus. That's what Malchus means. That for us, we believe that we're not just here for a random reason. There's a purpose. There's a focus. There's a goal. There is one goal that we're trying to get to. That's the idea of Malchus. Ki hem yamru kadesh lekabel alav ol malchut shamayim. And that's why Shema is referred to as a kabbalat ol malchut shamayim. Receiving on ourselves the yoke, the burden, the responsibility of malchut shamayim. Which again, doesn't just mean God is some kind of king, But it means that we are on message. We know what we're trying to do. There is a focus, a reason, and we're looking to that central point. Rotsen loma, meaning lahodot biyichud ulamino. Fine. In fact, I just thought I'd bring you, because it's interesting, there are many minhagim, and there are many halachas in terms of saying the Shema, and I want to share a few with you. First of all, if you look at number 3, you'll see that when Shema is written in a mezuzah, say for Torah, the ayin and the dalad are big, are written large, and therefore I brought you the Shema and the Echad. You can see, because they spell aid, ayin dalad, that this is a testimony, this pasuk stands as a testimony to our focus and our values, as I said before. The Gemara actually brings an interesting halacha, which we'll see in a minute, is not so easy to do. Tana Rabbanan, number 4. This applies to everybody, men, women, etc. Because even though women are not obligated in the time-bound mitzvah of Shema, in the sense that in the morning, in the evening, in the morning, women are obligated in Kabbalat Ol Malchut Shamayim, and accepting this mitzvah. This mitzvah is obligatory on every single Jew, and we'll see all the time. Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, says the Gemara. Ad kan tzricha kavanat alev. That's the very minimum that you have to have proper kavana when you're reading the Shema. You have to at least understand what that pasuk means and what its implications are. Zivri Rebbe Meir. So Rebbe Meir says, I'm a Rava, and Rava says, halachic Rebbe Meir. That's how we pass him. Even if you cannot focus through the rest of the Shema, that pasuk is essential. You need to know what that means. Tanya Sumchas. Now Sumchas says the following, Omer. Kol hamarich ve'echad. If you can elongate the echad, we'll see what that means, Marichin Yolayama Vashnaitav, you will have lengthened days and years. Interesting, by the way, that expression that you'll get Arichas Yomim Vashanim. Why do you, if you get long years, why do you need long days? Because you can have long years, many, many years of a long life where you don't really do much in any of the days. You need to have both things. You need to have a long day where you achieve a great deal, and a long life where you put all those days together to do things. So you have to elongate the echad. I think everyone's familiar with this, but Amar Rav Acha by Yaakov, what is he talking about? The dalet. You have to elongate the dalet. Now, by the way, just so you know, dalet, people say dalet is the letter, it's not dalet. It's dalet with a t at the end. And of course, if you're Ashkenazi and you want to be consistent, it's dalet. I've never heard anybody other than people who live in Texas talk about dalet. Therefore, even if you want to be consistent in the way that you write Ashkenazis, nobody says Olaf, and nobody says Dallas. Or some people might, but it looks very strange. But he had to elongate the Dalet. Amar Rav Ashi. Ubilvad shelo yachtof b'chet. And you can't do too short a note on the chet. Seemingly this seems to be very important. We'll see that a lot in a minute. Rav Yirmi yahavi yasib kameda Rav Chia bar Abba. So Rav Yirmi was sitting once in front of Rav Chia bar Abba. Chazia Rav Chia bar Abba, the rabbi, saw the Havimarech Tuva, that he was saying Hashem Alekeinu Hashem Echad for a very, very, very long time. So Amalei, so he jumped in and said to him, you don't need to do all that. How long do you need to say Echad for? Kevanda Amlichta Lamala. As long as you've accepted that God is the King, on high, Ulamata, and down below, Ula Arbaruchas Hashamayim, and according to all four corners of the entire universe, we'll see what that means philosophically later, Tuloy Tzricha, you don't need to do any more. What was he doing? And by the way, this is very difficult for us. How are you going to elongate the Echad? You've probably been to shuls. You've seen people try to do this. Let me let you in on a secret. If you're Sephardi or Ashkenazi, it's almost certainly impossible for you to fulfill this mitzvah properly. Why? Because what are you going to elongate? So some people you hear in shul, they go, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem, Well, they're not elongating the Dalet at all. They're just elongating the Aleph and making it into a completely different word. Or you see people going, people do all sorts of strange things in shul, okay? Or they go, and they just pay to put like 6 reishes on the end of the word. That's not the word either. So the truth is, the dalet is written without a dagesh, in this case. Dalet can be either with a dagesh or without a dagesh, without a dagesh in the middle. With a dagesh in the middle, with a dot, what's called a dagesh kal, as opposed to a dagesh chazak, I'm not getting into all the details now, but with a dagesh it's pronounced d. You cannot elongate the word d, because it's just not possible. It's a plosive consonant, and it's d. But if you pronounce it without the dagesh, like it's written, really originally dalet was pronounced v, like the th in either. And therefore, if you're a Yemenite and you still pronounce it that way, then you say, Hashem, Elokeinu, Hashem, Echad. and you can go on as long as you like. Now, we've got a bit of a problem because none of us really speak that way unless there's a, like a Teimani family on the Zoom, in which case, kol hakavod, you actually still speak the way that the mitzvah requires. So you really have a choice now. You either turn into a Yemenite just for one potter, or you say, look, there's nothing I can do to do this, I just have to have kavana. And in fact, the poskim say that the point is not to make a strange and unusual, spectacle of yourself in the word echad, but to have these kavanas. You can have them afterwards. Rav Kanievsky says, you can say echad, like a normal person, and then you can think of all these things as you think afterwards. But it's interesting to note that the pronunciation has made a big difference to the mitzvah, and if you're a Yemenite, then you're still in the parsha, but if you're not, then a little bit difficult. The Shulchan Aruch brings these halachas down. I thought you might be interested to see them in number 5, just very briefly, just some halachas of Kriya Shema, because these are halachas here as well. So the Shulchan Aruch says as follows, Yikra Kriya Shema b'kavana, you have to have kavana, understand what you're saying, be'ema, very serious, Yira, in a focused way, the Retet, Bezeya, in a way which is trembling and serious. You have to really understand the Shema is a very important thing. Dalet, Noegim Likrod, Posik Rishon B'Kol Ram, the Minhag used to say it out loud, Kidei La'orer HaKavana, so that we can really focus on it. Hey, Noegim, the Minhag is Liten Yedei Mal Paneihem, to put your hand on your eyes, so that B'Kriyash Posik Rishon, when you read the Posik, why? So you don't get disturbed. Kidei Shelo Yisakel B'Davar Acher, so you don't look at something else. Shimoni Milchavim, which will stop you focusing. And then he goes into, maybe you should make the Chet a bit longer, and you should make the Dalet longer, and how to pronounce it. I'm not getting into this right now. But he brings a Minhag, very interesting. He says, here, one second. Look at Vav for a second. Sarek laharech b'chet shel echad, kidei shim lach HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'shamayim v'aretz. You have to slightly ingo the Chet. And that's a little bump on the head. It talks about the heavens and the earth, 7 heavens and 1 earth, that's 8, etc. So yarech b'dalet, and then you make a slightly longer dalet. Ashir shiyachshav HaKadosh Baruch Hu yachid ba'olama and Moshe b'dalet ruchas ha'olam. Fine. And then he brings an interesting minhag. I just want to focus in on for a second. Can you still hear me? I got a little message that my internet was a bit sketchy. Are people still hearing me now? It's good? Okay, fine. And then he says, v'yesh noagim, I don't know if you've ever seen this, some people have a minag, lahatos harosh, to move around their head. Jews do some very strange things, it must be said, but they're to move around their head, kefiya machshava, as you're thinking around all the 4 directions, you move around your head, ma'ala ulamata, up and down, and 4 directions. Some people roll around their eyes to, all 4 directions, etc. And then he talks about the Dalet and the Ched and says you can't say it twice. You can't say Shema, Shema, Yisrael, Yisrael, or say the whole Pasuk twice. But I just want to focus in on this issue of moving our head around. What's going on there? Why are we moving our head around? Again, it's to help us to focus, to help us to understand that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is one in all places. But just look at this interesting Mishnah Brura in 6. Amak Shavah, he says, the Hatayat Tzricha Leyot Mizrach Tzafon Marav Drum. He says, when you're rolling your head around, you have to make sure that you roll it round in a circle. Okay? You go like this. This is a show and tell shear as well. But not, v'lo yita harosh mizrach marav, you can't go east and west, and then tzaf on dorum, and then up and down. You mustn't do that. Why not? Dahayu chas v'sholem shesi v'eru, because then it looks as though you're making the sign of the cross. Why would anybody think you were making the sign of the cross when you were saying the Shema? I'll tell you exactly why. Look at the Sefer HaIkrim. This actually became a very big point in medieval times. The Sefer HaIkrim points out, he says, the Sefer HaIkrim, Rav Yosef Albo in Spain, he's pointing out here that books are always going to be open to misunderstanding. That's why you need an oral tradition. He's focused on the idea of the oral law, because an oral conversation, which is between 2 people over the course of years, will be much clearer than if I write it all down in a book and someone picks it and reads it. Look at what he says. Uma she kol zava hanichtav me'eze min sheyi, whatever you write down, far efsha sheyuvan b'shkei havanot mitchalfot. You can always explain written things in different ways, often opposite ways. Ad she efsha sheyitia havanot ha'echad maskenet lekavanot ha'oimer, one understanding can be what the author intended, and the other one can be completely the opposite. He gives an example. Kimoshikaz of a Rambam, like the Rambam writes, the Igris Chizamesim in his letter on the resurrection, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, this pasuk, Ha'ivrim, the Jews, Yavinu Mimeno Ha'achzot HaGemorah, this pasuk tells us about God's complete unity. So Hanoitzrim and the Christians, Yifreshu Oysa Akavonas HaShalosh, they use this pasuk to prove the Trinity. Interesting. This pasuk of all psukim that says that God is one, they use that pasuk to prove that God is actually not one, but God is three. And therefore, there is a there's a real concern there. We don't want somebody sitting in the shul, moving his head around like a crucifix, because there's this pasuk has been a very, very famous and difficult and trying pasuk over the years. And in fact, there are midrashim which very clearly speak against Trinitarianism, the idea that God is three. Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Amar Avabu, number 8, Moshel Melech Basav Adam Molech. A king can reign in human terms, V'yesh La'av, he has a father, or Achi has a brother. Amar Kodesh Baruch Hu, Hashem says to us, Ani, who? Okay, Ani Ve'eni Kein, Ani Eini Kein. I am not the same way as a human king. Ani Rishon She'eini Av, I am the first and I have no father. Ani Achrom She'eini Ach, I am the last and I have no sibling. Umivaladi ein elokim, there is no God apart from me. Ein li ben, I have no son. There is no son and there is no father. And that comes in very clearly on the psukim here, the anti-Christianity message that was actually wrapped up also in Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, interestingly. Okay, fine. Now, let's move on. Having looked at a bit of halacha and minhag and talked about Yemenite pronunciation, let's look at the ikar itself. The Rambam treats this pasuk, this verse, as the second of the 13 principles of faith. Look at what he says, number 9. Let's look at this quite briefly. Hayisod Hasheni, the second principle is this. Yichudo Yitale, this is God's oneness. Vahush Zehu Ilat HaKol, this original being, Echad, is just one. But like Echad HaSuk, not like one of a kind of species or a genus, which has lots of other ones within it. So like Echad HaMin, and not like one of a specific species, which is also a group of other individuals. So like Echad, like Isha Echad HaMurkav, not like a person that's one, but is comprised of lots of other parts, like a heart and the lungs, etc. So lo echad kegufa pashut acher b'minyan, and not like just one thing, like one piece of wood. Asher yikabel hachulukala einsof, which can be divided into infinite little pieces. You can split it up. Ella rather hu yitale echad ba'achdut she'ein k'motel ba'achdut b'shum panim. God's oneness is a oneness that you've never even experienced before. You can't imagine what that oneness is. It's complete and total unity, undividable in any way, undivisible. And the Rambam in Halacha, at the beginning of the Mishnah Torah, the Rambam makes us realize, and don't forget, this is not just a philosophical point. He says this is a halachic point. If you're davening, if you're doing mitzvahs, you have to know what kind of God you're doing them for. If you're doing all the mitzvahs in the world and eating all the best hechsherim in the world, if you're doing it for the wrong understanding of God, then you're not doing any mitzvahs correctly. That's why he puts it all at the beginning of the Mishnah Torah, you have to understand, and therefore number 10, I'm not going to read it all through, but he again says that God's oneness is a oneness which is beyond any kind of oneness, because anything which is divisible is limited. And therefore, understanding God in a way which compartmentalizes God makes God limited in a way which is by definition not what God is, and he says you need to understand this. And at the end he says, "V'yidia davazeh mitzvah asei." This is a positive mitzvah. Shneimar shma Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. And not only is it a mitzvah, but it is a mitzvah to meet it. And I mentioned this last week as well. The Sefer Achinuch makes a big point of saying that there are 6 mitzvot which apply to every Jew every minute of the day that they're awake, from the moment they're bar mitzvah at Me'ah Be'eshrim until 120. And this is one of them. Look at 11 with me. Shechayav kol echad miYisraeli harega mitzvah yichud. A person has to even die, God forbid, al kiddush Hashem for this mitzvah of yichud. That there's one value, one goal. If shekol she'ein amoide biyichudo baruchu ki'ilu kofe be'ikah. Because if you don't get this, you've rejected everything. She'ein shleimut hamemshala v'ha'od ela im achdus gamor. Because God is only God if God has this oneness to him. Otherwise, you just dumbed it down to more definable little pieces. So in Cain, Harry mitzvah zeh michlal issa avodah zorah. That's why avodah zorah, idolatry, is such a big idea in Judaism. It's not just about little statues. It's about understanding what God is and what God is not. And that's why there are so many mitzvahs that focus on idolatry. V'zot echad min ha-mitzvah she'amarnu b'tchilat ha-sefer. This is one of the mitzvahs that we said. She'adam chayav behem behatzmada, that every Jew, every person that you know who's Jewish has to do this all the time. Even a moment. This is actually a very interesting, challenging halacha. What does it mean that you have to think that God is one every time you go to the makolet, every time that you go to sleep, every time that you get in the car to pick up the kids from school? Somehow or other, it's not that you should be constantly saying the Shema in your head. It's that a person should be aware of the implications of this, that every single thing they're doing in life, they're doing because it is focused on a certain goal, a certain end, a certain meaning. And that can actually be life-transforming. It means that, I'm going to talk a little bit in a minute, that it means it changes the implications for almost everything we do in life and turns things which are mundane into some things which are extremely meaningful. So let's have a look at that right now, and let's see it inside. There are a few implications in our life, generally, for this mitzvah of Hashem Echad. Look at Yigdal. Everyone knows Yigdal, they sing Yigdal in Shul, and the second verse of Yigdal, of course, which summarizes the Yud Gimel Midas, says, Echad ve'en yachid ki yichuda, God is one, and there is no one like his oneness. Ne'elam, that's an interesting word, ne'elam, God is hidden, inscrutable, unfathomable, unimaginable, invisible, v'gam ein sof le'achdutor, and eternal in this oneness. This actually has interesting implications. That why can't we see God? Why can't we feel God? This is a big emunah question. Why can't I sense God around me? The answer is because everything around you is God. Look at this interesting midrash in Bereishis Rabbah. The Yifka b'makom, God, Yaakov came upon this place. You remember when he's leaving Eretz Israel to go to live with Laban? He came to the place and he hits on the place, Hamakom. So we know, you know and I know, that God's name, Hamakom, is often used, the place. Why is God called Hamakom? So look at the Gemara here, there's the Medrash. Rav Huna b'shem Rabbi Ami Amar, mitnei man mechavin shmoy shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, v'korin oto Makom. Why do we call God Makom? Place. It's a strange word for God. I don't know if any other religion uses the word place for God. But we do, all the time. Hamakom, when we go to a shiva, Hamakom yinachem etchem. Hamakim Yerachem Etchem. Hamakim is a very big thing. Shehu Makayma Shal Olam, because God is the location of the world. The Ein Olamo Makomo, but the world is not the location of God. Very interesting. What does that mean? It means that God is much more than the universe, but the universe resides within God on a certain level. That, if you want to give it a fancy name, is what they call panentheism. Not pantheism. Pantheism is the idea that God is the universe and the universe is God. That's what Spinoza got into a lot of hot water for. But panentheism, which is a very Hasidic idea as well, based on these Gemaras and others, is that actually the world is within God, but God is far more than just the world. And therefore, when we look around us, actually, what we're perceiving around us, if we look at it in a certain way, is just a different kind of spirituality. Like Rav Kook said very often, there's no such thing as Kodesh and Chol. There's just Kodesh and that which has not yet been realized as Kodesh. Everything around is the idea of the sparks of Kedusha, the sparks of spirituality. The idea that we call spirituality Ruach. What is Ruach? Ruach is the wind. Why do we use that metaphor? That the Ruach, Ruchnius, because the air around us is so omnipresent, it's there all the time, we don't even feel it. We don't even see it. But every now and then when the wind blows, and it can blow very hard, if a hurricane hits you, then you realize how strong the air is. Gosh, I never thought that air was that strong. That's why we call Ruach Ruach. Because Ruach is actually just the air, the spirit, which is all around us, but it, every now and then it hits us in the face. It's a very beautiful idea as to why we call Ruach Ruach. For those of you who are into Gematria, who maybe some of you, maybe all of you, maybe none of you, I'm a bit of a skeptic on Gematria, I must tell you, because it's a little bit abused. I've been to too many Sheva Brochas, where Gematrias are used to prove everything and the whole world and nothing at the same time. But that every now and then, Gematrias do actually help us. And Rav Aryeh Kaplan has a very beautiful Gematria, I think. If you take the names, the letters of the names of Hashem, Yud, and Hey, and Vav, and Hey, okay? And instead of taking them as they are, you square them to make a spatial awareness. That's what a square is. And you square Yud, you square Hey, you square Vav, and you square Hey, then you get the Gematria of Hamakom, or Mokom, I should say. So God, Mokom is God's spatial presence, as opposed to God's, if you like, one-dimensional, sometimes that we see things in one dimension. I brought it in the footnotes if you're interested in gematria. Also, very important, and this is, in today's world, a very live issue, we don't believe in a dualism. We don't believe that there's a dark side and a light side. The powers of evil and the powers of good, that's a very Christian idea that they picked up from Zoroastrianism. Look at number 14. Yotzeor, we quote this, or partially quote it every morning in Shacharit. God creates light. Borech Hashish, God creates dark. Oseh Shalom, God creates peace. Uvayre Ra, and God creates evil. The things that seem bad in the world, there's nothing coming from any other source. Ani Hashem Oseh Kol Eleh, I'm God, I'm doing all those things. Now, whether God creates the evil that people choose to do is a very important discussion, which is not for now. Does free choice go beyond God's Hashgacha? There are those who say yes, there are those who say no. Actually, a very important philosophical question. If somebody sticks a gun to somebody's head and shoots them, is that what God wanted to happen? Or is that God says, look, I give everybody free choice and I don't want necessarily what they choose, but they have to have the freedom to choose. And depending on which way you answer that question, that really reframes the discussion that people often understandably want to ask, you know, where was God in the Holocaust? Those kind of questions, which obviously don't have glib one-sentence answers, but Rabbi Sacks, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, would always reframe that question and say that's not the question. The question is, where was man in the Holocaust? Because people have the free choice to do what they do, and if they do evil, that's not necessarily coming from God. Okay, there's a bigger discussion there. I have Shirim online on that issue, which is not for now. But bottom line, we don't believe in Satan. We don't believe in the powers of good and the powers of evil, and therefore that's not our idea of spirituality. Look at this fascinating Gemara number 15. What happens if you can't get hold of your own, you know, Yetzer HaTov, if you're being dragged into doing something that you know is the wrong thing to do? What should you do? So the Gemara gives a piece of good advice. Amar Rebbe Levi Bar Chama, Amar Rebbe Shimon Ben Lachish, number 15. La'olam yargiz adam Yetzer Tov al Yetzer Ra. A person should always find, like, psychological ways to get their Yetzer Tov working against the Yetzer Ra. You know, the two little malachim, the two little angels on your shoulders, which are saying, do it, don't do it. You should try and, you know, play with that psychology to make sure you do the right thing. Im nitzchu mutter, says the Gemara, if you succeed, that's great. The im lav, and if you don't, yasok b'torah, learn Torah, that'll help you. It'll help you focus on the right thing to do. Im nitzchu, if that works, mutter, great. The im lav, and if not, yikra kriya shema. Say Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Why? Because then you'll realize that the Yetzer Hara is just part of God's plan, and there's no reason why you should give in to it. Im nitzchu, if that's true, then mutav, then that's good. If that works. But im lav, and that doesn't work, yizkel yom amisa, remember the day of death, because usually it's not worth it. Whatever you're achieving by this particular negative thing, it's not worth it in the long run. So the dark side, light side issue, good side, bad side, is very important. Also, like I said, Shema Yisrael really represents the idea that everything in life is significant. That's really, philosophically, why is halacha so omnipresent, omnisignificant? Why are the halachas for how we do our shoelaces and how we run a country and how we get our vaccines and what we say and what we do, etc., etc.? Why do we do that? Why do we allow halacha into every single microsecond of our life? The answer is because there's nothing that is not relevant. Everything, echad, everything has a purpose, everything has a goal. So when you go to sleep at night, rather than just collapsing in bed after a difficult day, so you can think, I'm sleeping so that I can prepare for tomorrow, because sleep itself is part of my avodas Hashem. And that's a lot of musa, shmuzen given on that and those kind of ideas, and we talked about purpose and in life. We don't believe that freedom has a value in and of itself. And this actually is a very interesting point. There's freedom from and there's freedom to. This is a well-known discussion in philosophy as well. The non-Jewish world seems to focus on freedom from. Just get out of there. Get out of being a slave. What are you meant to do with your newfound freedom? Irrelevant. So we don't believe in that. Freedom from is usually just an opportunity to destroy yourself, to become totally hefka. Freedom to is so that I need to be free so that I can do something. And that's what's coming out in Shema. That's why the Rambam said that Shema is the whole story of Yetziat Mitzrayim. Let me let you in on a secret. How many times does Moses say, let my people go? Not once. Not once. He doesn't say Shlach Ami. He always says Shlach Ami V'Avduni. Let my people go so that they can serve me. So that, there has to be a freedom too. Interestingly, when they make the, you know, Charlton Heston gets up and, I haven't watched the movie recently. Maybe I can check in the movie. But whenever they talk about the Exodus, they always talk about, let my people go. And that's not what's going on here. It's let my people go so that. An interesting point that I heard once, the Greek names for the books of the Chumash, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, where do they come from? So they come from the rabbinic names for the Sforim. What are they? They are Sefer Yetzirah, the Book of Creation, which is Genesis, and let's do Vayikra next, Torat Kohanim, the laws of the Levites or the Kohanim, that's Leviticus, Sefer Pekudim, the Book of Numbering, that's Numbers, and Mishneh Torah, the second Torah, which is Deuteronomy. Okay, Duo is two, Onomy is law. That's great, but what about Exodus? What is the name in Hebrew for the Book of Exodus, the rabbinic name? It's Sefer HaGeulah, the Book of Redemption. And it's fascinating when the non-Jews translated that, they just translated it as Exodus. That's not the point. They've missed the point. The point is not getting out of Egypt. The point is getting out so that we can get the Torah. Very, very important point and different way to see that. And that's all coming out of Shema Yisrael. Okay, fine. Let's now deal with the second question that I want to deal with today, which is the implications of the fact that God is one. So the Rambam, when he talks about this idea, says, actually, when you understand the implications of Hashem Echad, you realize that something which is completely uniform, you can't define in any way. And therefore, says the Rambam, you cannot say God is great. You can't say that. Because then there's God, one thing, and then how he is, which is another thing. You've divided in some way God. And therefore, every time you say anything positive about God, you're in some way actually offending against this idea. Because I'm defining, I'm putting God into some kind of mental box, and it's not correct. The Rambam says this is his favorite Gemara. In the Moreh Nevuchim, he says, I wish all Gemaras were as great as this one. Have a look here in number 16. Have a look at this Gemara. I think you'll enjoy it. There was somebody davening in front of Reb Chanina. Back in the day, they used to be able to extemporize a little bit. But the Chazan used to be able to not just say the fixed prayers, but go off and other things himself. Amar, so this guy said, this Chazan said, Hakel, Hagadol, Hagibor, Vahanora, but he didn't stop there. Vahadir, Vahazuz, Vahayiroi, Vahachazak, Vahamitz, Vahabadai, Vahanechbad. He just needs to say all of these amazing praises about God. He's just so into it. Okay, so Rabbi Chanina's waiting for him. Himtin Lav Design. He waited till he finished. Kisayin, when he'd finished, the rabbi said to him, Siyam Tayin of Kulishvachi Demarech. You finished now? That's all? You've said everything there is to say about God? Shkoyach, he said. All you've done is caused a problem. Lamali Kolihai, why do you need to say all these things about God? Anan Hanit Klaf, look carefully here. These three that I'm reading that we say, Hakela Gadol Gibor Nora. Gadol Gibor Nora. Ilav da Amrin Hu Moshe Rabbeinu Baraita. If Moshe hadn't put them in the Torah, Va'ato Anshei Knesset Gadol Veheiknu B'Tfilah, and the men of the Great Assembly who fixed the davening hadn't put them in the Tfilah, Loi Havinu Yichonim LeMeimalu. We would never have been allowed to say that. Gadol Gibor Nora. How can you say that? Va'ata Mar Kulihai. You're saying all of these other ones. You can't. What's coming out of that is actually the Rambam says a very important principle of Jewish thought, which is you can't describe God. The only words you can use are the words that God himself uses to describe himself. Gadol Gibor Nora. Good, that's in the Torah, from Nevuah. And the Anshei Knesset Gedola, who also were prophets, they had prophets amongst them, Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi, they told us we could say this. But if you want to describe God in other ways, then you can't do that. And therefore the Rambam develops what he calls negative theology. Well, he doesn't call it that, but it's called that later. And I'm not going to read through this whole thing in Moreh Nevuchim. You can read it on your own. But basically he says in number 17 that really the only thing you can ever say about God is what God is not. If I say God is great, I don't mean that. I mean God is not the opposite of great. If I say God is infinite, infinite is itself a negative word. Infinite. He's not finite. So every single thing I say about God has to be, says the Rambam, negative. It has to be negative. I can say, well, God is not. Okay, good. God is not this, God is not that, God is not the other. So I'm not describing God. But it's accurate because God is not any of these things. And therefore he says, never say anything positive about God. Look at just two lines about here in the middle. It has thus been shown, since every attribute predicated of God either denotes an action, which we'll see in a minute, what God does, or when the attribute is intended to convey some idea of the divine being itself and not his actions, the negation of the opposite. Now, I don't know about you, but talking about God in the negative seems a little bit like unfulfilling to me, a little bit cold. Meaning, think about what the Rambam's done. He's got you all excited in the first Ikar, and he's told you, you have to think about God, understand God, cognate, philosophize, and then he's just told you, but you actually don't know anything about God, and you can't define anything about God. You can only say what God is not. So I now think like Shkoyach, like what do I do with that? It's leaving me, you know, very deflated, in a sense. I need a relationship. And we'll see Rav Kook at the end. You can't have a relationship with a God that you only define in the negative. Imagine that you had a relationship with your spouse and the only ever thing you said about her was negative. Well, actually, quite a lot of marriages sometimes you might feel that they work that way, but they're not meant to work that way. You're not meant to just define other people in what they're not. Oh, you're not this and you're not that and you're not this and you're not that. It's a disaster. You can't have a relationship like that. So the Rambam knows that. So don't lose faith in the Rambam yet, because he's going to rescue this idea. With what? So let me introduce you to something I learned many years ago from one of my teachers, Rav Meir Tribbetz. Rav Meir Tribbetz is a fascinating man. He's a Rosh Hashiva in Har Nof. He has a PhD in applied physics from Princeton. He's also went to the Juilliard School of Music. He's the most versatile and diverse and fascinating man I've ever met, quite frankly. And I went to a number of shirim with him many years ago on the issue of the Yud Gimel Ikrim. So have a look here at what the Rambam says. So how do we understand this? I'm going to let you in on something which was for me quite life-changing. First of all, the Rambam says, try and understand God. Anochi Hashem Elokecha. And then the Rambam says, nope, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. God is so much a one, you'll never understand anything positive about God. Okay, so what do I do now? The third Ikar. The third Ikar is God doesn't have a body. Okay. So what's that got to do with anything? That's not even related. Yes, it is. Look here, look in the English here, in number 18. I'll show you what's going on. The third principle, says the Rambam, he has no physicality. This means the oneness in Ikar 2 is not physical, has no physical strength. He's not affected by physical qualities such as rest, movement, neither in essence nor in incidentally. Therefore, the rabbis negated in relation to him any connectedness or separateness. The prophet said, to whom can you compare God? For if he were physical, he would be like any other physical body. And everything that's written in the holy books regarding physical descriptions of God, such as walking, standing, sitting, speaking, is allegorical. Okay, good, we know that God doesn't really have eyes and ears, and God doesn't have feet and legs. It's all allegorical. Thus the rabbi said, the Torah spoke in human language. Dibra Torah, Kolashon Bnei Adam. People have already spoken at length on this issue. This is the third principle, and it's attested by the verse, for you saw no image at Sinai. We didn't see God at Sinai, we heard God. I.e., you didn't comprehend him as a being with an image, for as we've mentioned, he's not physical nor has any physical strength. Okay, so that's interesting. So, apparently, the resolution of our problem is we didn't see God physically at Sinai. So what did we see at Sinai? We'll see in a minute. And that's this week's parsha as well. That's why I like giving this shir last week and this week, because it connects so well with those two things. By the way, the idea that God doesn't have a body and it's allegorical is one of the reasons why we give a little boy Anim Zmirot. Why doesn't the Chazan just sing Anim Zmirot? You know what I'm talking about at the end of Shacharis on Shabbos? Why do we give it to some little boy? Anim Zmirot, Mashirim Erot. Like, what's that all about? So the answer is, if you read the words of Anim Zmirot, you'll see that it says the most outrageous things about God's image. It says that God has long black curly hair. And we're concerned that if you give that to a chazan to sing, then they'll look at that and they'll say, they might even become a heretic because of it. If you give it to a kid, you assume the kid's not got a clue what he's saying anyway, and therefore the kid can say it. I like this minhag, because it assumes that when we daven, we do know what we're saying, which is unfortunately not always the case either. But certainly we don't sing an Inzmirod unless we can. So what did the people see at Sinai? So let's look into this for a second, because therein lies the clue and the key to our answer. So actually, when people look at Har Sinai, they sometimes forget that it appears in a few different places. What happened at Sinai to the people is different to what happened at Sinai to Aaron the Kohanim, and is different to what happened at Sinai to Moshe Rabbeinu. Three different experiences at Sinai. So I'm sure you're familiar with this, but it's worthwhile recapping. Look at number 19. What did the people experience at Sinai? So lots of smoke, lots of fire, lots of like flame, lots of fog, nothing clear at all. They heard clearly, but they didn't see anything clearly. But yet, Moshe to Amli Krat Elokim, God, Moshe took the people to meet God, Min HaMachaneh, from the camp, Vitrasu, Vitaktisaha, they stood at the bottom of the mountain, the Har Sinai, Ashan, it was all smoking, Kula, Mipnei Asher Yorad Elokha Alav Hashem, God's presence has caused it all to fog over, to smoke over, the Eish, the Yal Ashanaka, Eshen HaKivshan, like a furnace, smoking, the Chared Kol Hahar, everything was shaking, the Hikol Shafar, and there was a noise, this noise like a shofar going out, the Chazak Ma'od, extremely loud noise, Moshe Yidaber, and they could hear Moshe speaking, V'alokim Yanenu B'kol, and Moshe and God answering. V'kol Ha'am Ro'in Et HaKalot, they could see the noises, whatever that means, seeing the noises, the information, V'talapidin V'eskol HaShofar, V'tahar HaShan, but the mountain was completely fogged over, totally smoked. So the people didn't see anything clearly. Okay? Whenever you approach God, there always has to be a cloud. By the way, that's one of the reasons why the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur, when he goes Lifnai V'Lifnim, when he goes into the innermost parts of the Beit HaMikdash, he has to create a cloud. He does it with incense, but he has to create a cloud to recreate Har Sinai, because you cannot approach God unless you do so in a cloud. Very interesting idea. But the Kohanim saw something different, and people forget to read the end of Parshas Mishpatim. That's this Parsha. Look at what it says in Mishpatim. Now Moshe Amar, God says to Moshe, Alei al Hashem, go up to Hashem, Atav, Aaron, Nadav, Avihu, Shivim, Izigmi, Israel, you and the Kohanim and the 70 elders, they're going to get a different kind of show. Vishtachavitim Arachok, bow down from afar. V'yal Moshe v'Aaron v'Nadav v'Avihu v'Shivim v'Zikne Yisrael. They all go up, and what do they see? Look at this. V'yiru et Elokei Yisrael, they saw the God of Israel. V'tachat ragav kamase libnat sapir, ha-sapir. There's like a blue sapphire brickwork underneath God's feet, underneath God's throne, ke'etzem hashamayim letohar, and it's the purest of pure blues. This idea of blue, blue is such a Jewish color. It's such an important Jewish color, spiritually speaking, tchelet, and in the modern day world, that's where the Israeli flag gets its blue and white from. But this idea of they saw something which was blue, but they didn't see God as an image. They saw blue. So the people saw smoke. The Kohanim saw blue, a kind of blue patchwork. What did Moshe see? So remember the story, I'm not going to have time to go through the whole thing again, but when Moshe was on top of the mountain, he basically is begging for forgiveness for the golden calf. So let's pick up a couple of these ideas. He says, for example, 21, he says to God, if you really want to help me here, show me your ways. Show me how you run the world. Okay, and God says to him, yes, I will go forth in front of you. And Moshe says, yes, please go in front of us. And then, pick it up at Yud Zayin. Okay, I'll do what you say. I'll show you my ways. I do like you. I do favor you. And I know you by name. And then Moshe says, key words, Hareini na'et kvodecha. It's not good enough for me to know your ways. I want to see you. Hara'eini, show me. I want to see with my own eyes what God is. Okay? And then God says, no, that's not happening. Vayomen, God says, Ani yaveh kol tuvi al panecha. I'm going to bring my goodness before you. V'karati v'shem Hashem. I'm going to call out God's name in front of you. V'chanoti asher achon, rechemti asher achem. Vayomen, he said, Lo tuchal liros et panai. You cannot see my face. Because no living person can do what you just asked. No living person can see me. You can't. But then what does he do? He says, I'm going to put you in a rock, in a cleft in the rock. I'm going to cover you with my hand. And the famous words that we read every day, some people, God passes by him and calls out God's name. Hashem, Hashem, kel rachum v'chanun. Erech Apaim, Rav Chesed V'Emet, Nose Chesed Li'Alafim, Nose Avul Fesh V'Chatav V'Naken. Okay? We know these words. We say them. On Yom Kippur, we say them again and again and again and again. the Yud Gimel Midot Harachamim. So what's really going on here? So what's going on here is a conversation. Moshe Rabbeinu says to God two things. He asks him two things. The Rambam later on the sheet explains this very clearly. Moshe asks him, I want to see your ways, explain how you run the world. And then he asks him, and I want to see you. And to those things, God answers, yes to the first, no to the second. The best we can ever come to understanding God, given that you cannot see God, that you cannot perceive God, you cannot define God. What did I just say at the beginning of the shir? Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad means God is undefinable. So then what can I do? The answer is, you can either express negatively what God is, or what Moshe Rabbeinu achieved on the mountain is, you can see how God works in the world. God's midot. Hashem is rachum, chanun, kel erech apayim. And then you can copy that. And then that's how a person can be a godly person. And I think this is a really important idea, which I want to just share with you as we kind of move towards the end of the shir. Look, in the Mishnah Torah, the Rambam talks about this. He says God wanted to see, Moshe wanted to see God like a person sees their friend. From the front. I know exactly, I can pigeonhole you, I can box you in my mind. If I now think of a person's face, I can see that in my mind's eye. Says God, you can't do that. You can see me from behind, but not from the front. Look in the Moreh Nevuchim, number 23. The wisest man, our teacher Moshe, asked two things of God. Two things. And received a reply regarding both. The one thing he asked is God should let him know his true essence. The other, which in fact he asked first, is that God should let him know his attributes. In answer to both these petitions, God promised that he would let him know his attributes, and that these were nothing but his actions. He also told him that his true essence could not be perceived, and pointed out a method by which he could attain the utmost knowledge of God possible for man to acquire. And therefore, the Rambam actually finishes Moreh Nevuchim by giving us a very inspiring idea. He finishes Moreh Nevuchim at the very end, the guy's perplexed, and says, this whole book has been trying to get you to understand God. And you can't understand God completely. But this is what you can do. You can see God's attributes in the world, how God acts in the world, and then you're not defining God, you're defining how you perceive God, which is fine. And then you can perfect that. You can develop a religious ethic before you even get to Torah and mitzvahs, before you even get to the specifics, but you can say, I connect with God in such a way that I understand what God does in the world, and I can copy those. I mahu rachum afata rachum, mahu chanun afata chanun, which is a mitzvah in the Torah, the halachta v'drachav, to copy God and to develop that, if you like, relationship by imitating God. So actually, where have we got to? We've got to, I think, a very beautiful and very inspiring place, which is that having told you in last week's parsha, in last week's shir, the mitzvah of Anochi, which is that you have a mitzvah to try and understand God, and then having told you, but Hashem Echad, you will not get it, and you cannot describe God. He then tells you, but you can copy God. You can understand the way to be a good, true, honest, worthwhile person, and that is by copying this midot. And then you can come on to mitzvot. Then you can come on to the idea, well, you know, are there specifics that I need to do? But this, if you like, the halachta b'drachav, as he says at the end, look at number 24 for a second. He says, Moshe says, man cannot only glory in the knowledge of God and the knowledge of his ways and attributes, which are his actions. He says, show me your ways. We are thus told in this passage the divine acts which ought to be known and ought to serve as a guide to our actions are chesed, mishpat, and tzedakah. If you want a summary of what does it mean to have a relationship with God, it's to live a life of chesed, kindness and giving, of mishpat, of honesty and truth, and of tzedakah, of trying to always achieve the right thing in life in different ways. And Micha talks about this as well. He puts in Sniyut as well. But this is the climax of Moreh Nevuchim. This is the bottom line. And therefore, I think ultimately, and I'm going to show you Rav Kook right now because I think Rav Kook is very beautiful on this. What Emunah is really all about is trying to understand what we can understand, trying to understand what we can't understand, and through that developing a relationship with God, which is just like we have a relationship with our spouse, we try to emulate them, or the people we really trust and love, we try to be like them. Just like they are, I try to learn from that. I've learned so many things from my own wife qualities and characteristics and things that I didn't have myself that I've tried to copy in different ways, probably pretty poorly over the years. But the point is seeing what you can in the other and copying and trying to be those good things. Look at Rav Kook. Let's give Rav Kook some of the final words. He says, actually, this is what Emunah is. Number 25. Ha'emunah, eino lo sechel, it's not really just intellect. The lo regesh, and it's not just feeling. Meaning, intellect's important, we'll see, and feeling is important, feeling connected. It's not really intellect and feeling. Elo gilui atzmi, emunah, faith, belief, Jewish emunah, is an independent revelation, hayoter yosodi, of the most fundamental part, shel mahut haneshama, of the person's soul. Meaning Rav Kook understands that emunah is natural. It's like breathing. It's like just being alive. It's like your blood pumping around your body. Emunah is there, deeply in your soul. It's connected. Shitzarech lahadrichoto, and this emunah has to direct the soul, betchunata, in its natural way. U'kashe'ein mashchitim, when there are no negative things which are disturbing that, et darkah tivila, which are disturbing the natural, the root of the soul, einena tzricha l'shem tzochen achar esada. It doesn't need anything else. Elohim otza'a ba'atma et hakol. The emunah will just erupt and speak for itself. But, and here's the key for us, ve'et ha'chalash ora, hechlesh ora, when the light is dimmed, when there are things bothering us and too many pings on our WhatsApps and too much news and too many problems and too much sorrow that's distracting us, as then baha seichel, we can start using intellect, baha regesh, and feeling, emotion, lifnot lefaneha derech, to try and open up a path. So he's saying actually that emunah is innate, it's natural. Why do I need intellect? Why do I need emotion? When I can't, you know, tune in to that natural emunah that my soul is trying to reach out, says Rav Kook, so then I bring in these other tools. So philosophy is a toolkit, and emotion is a toolkit, and psychology is a toolkit, and we have to use it to kind of free up the natural, you know, inclination of our soul to reach out. There's so much more to say about Rav Kook, which I don't have the background necessarily to explain properly, but I think he really gives a very strong kind of underpinning to this idea of emunah. Let me just leave you with a bit of recommended reading. We're not going to go any further on this. We're going to talk next week about Purim, which is the more down to earth, but equally exciting, I think. I brought you a couple of book recommendations. One is the following. Rav Zev Karov, about 20 years ago, wrote a book called Dat Ma Shetashiv La'atzmacha. It's only in Hebrew, as far as I'm aware. Know What to Answer to Yourself, which is a beautiful book about emunah, very much in the style and thinking of Rav Kook. I think Rav Karov passed away recently, but his book is well worth reading. And then I want to recommend another book. Last week we talked about Rabbi Lam, but actually the book that I most strongly recommend on this is a book written by Rabbi Chaim Jachter. I put it here on the sheet. About 3 or 4 years ago, he wrote a book called Reason to Believe. I don't think it's such a well-known book, but the book really is, like Rabbi Lam's book, it's directed towards the observant community. It's not per se an outreach book. It's directed towards kids, towards grown-ups, people who grew up in the religious world, but never really got their emunah questions answered and explained. And he talks about all of the things that we've talked about, and he brings it very up to date. He talks about archaeology, he talks about Jewish history, and I brought a little summary of what he does there, the arguments he brings for emunah, which I find from his book very compelling. The argument, not just the argument from design, which we talked about last week, but the traditions of the Torah, the Kuzari, Jewish history, Rav Soloveitchik's argument from halacha, the idea of the halachic system being itself a source of emunah, which is, I think, a very interesting idea. People sometimes think of it the other way around. If I believe in God, then I'll keep halacha. Not so straightforward. Halacha itself can be an inspiration to believe in God. And also, finally, which I've heard many times from Rav Rimon, prophecies which have been fulfilled in our times. Meaning, if a person asked 150 years ago, why should I believe in God? Okay, that's a good question. Where the life of the average Jew was miserable in the shtetl, in the haim, in the pale of settlement, with pogroms. Yes, good question. Well, how can you keep the faith? If a person asked a Jew today, why should I believe in God? It's almost a nonsense question. that we can live in 2021 with all its challenges, but in Eretz Yisrael, in a land which is so developed, Baruch Hashem, and Bli Ayin Hara, with our own police, and with our own army, with our own economy, with millions of Jews coming back to live in Israel. This, for most of our great-grandparents, would have been the definition of Yemot HaMashiach, quite frankly. But we don't see it because we're in the moment. And therefore, belief in the prophecies which have been fulfilled in front of our very eyes. Rav Shalom Gold has a great line. He says, if you want to speak to God, then go to the Kotel. If you want to meet God, if you want to experience God, then go to the Shuk. Go to the Shuk. Now you can go to the Shuk. Okay, wear a mask, socially distance. But go to the Shuk, look at the fruit, look at the vegetables, look at everything. And that itself is a source of enormous emunah. And I brought you at the very end, oh, there's a little typo there, the Permission to Believe, Rabbi Lawrence Kellerman, the classic outreach books aimed at the non-observant world, and Reason to Believe by Rabbi David Gottlieb. Not same name, same title as the other one. The Rabbi Gottlieb's name has got a little garbled at the end, but they're also very, very well worth reading. Much more classic arguments which are made in Outreach and Kirov, etc. Again, all of them have responses, debates, etc. But I hope that what I've been through over the last two shiurim at least gives us room for thought. We don't talk enough about God. We don't talk enough about emunah. And these are important issues for all of us from cradle to grave. We need to think about these things. But that's what we're going to do for now. Let's leave it there. It's 11:15 here in Israel. And next week we are going to deal with not just Purim Meshulash, but also the very, very unusual calendrical year that we live in, 5781, which has a number of very rare occurrences coming together in this year, which I'm going to talk about a little bit, and then we'll look at the issue of Purim Meshulash. So now you're making your Purim preparations. That will be a timely, hopefully, share. But from now till then, I leave you, have a wonderful week, and thank you to our sponsors again, and be well, and keep well, and I'll see you, please God, in a week from now. All the best, and have a wonderful
week. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Wonderful. Yeah.